It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Friday marks 2 years since Hurricane Maria struck Puerto Rico, and 1 year since The Takeaway traveled to the island to report on its aftermath. An estimated 130,000 people left Puerto Rico in the aftermath of Hurricanes Maria and Irma, and the island has lost at least 4% of its total population, according to the Census Bureau. Many ended up on the U.S. mainland, building lives in new places.
Hi, my name is Analita Now. I'm from Juncos, Puerto Rico.
Analí is one of the estimated 7,000 Puerto Ricans who came to Massachusetts in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria. She landed in Springfield with her sister and nephews. Analí's nephews were suffering from health issues back in Puerto Rico, and after Maria, medication and clean water were hard to find.
In Puerto Rico, a lot of damage, so the hospital don't have the medicine, so the water was contaminated, like the water you use to take a shower.
Analí and her sister settled in Springfield because they had family there. And there was a small network of services and a Puerto Rican community that helped her get on her feet.
My grandma and my cousin and my brother lived here. So when we came, we started living with my cousin. And then the Red Cross helped us to get our shelter in a hotel. I meet a lot of people in the shelter, in the hotel. And I see a lot of community, like Puerto Rican community. So I make friends in the beginning, just one. And then I start working every Tuesday, and I meet another friend who helped us, was a good support for us.
Like so many people who had to leave Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, Analí is still very connected to the island, but she doesn't think she'll be able to go back.
I miss my island, my friends, my family. I have all my family in Puerto Rico, my mom, my dad, my cousins. I have my best friend. She says it's not good for her. She wants to come here too because in Puerto Rico she don't find like a good job. And she wants to create his future. So she don't see that in Puerto Rico. She don't have help there. So I like to live here. I miss my island, obviously. I see my future here. Puerto Rico don't have that for me.
It's clear that many people are saying that their best shot at education or advancement in their careers or just mere survival is to stay in the United States, which doesn't mean that people are necessarily entirely comfortable with that. Many do it with great reluctance, but definitely that they don't have as much faith in that things will improve in Puerto Rico fast enough for their children or for themselves.
That's Frances Negron Montaner, a Puerto Rican filmmaker, writer, and scholar. She's also a professor at Columbia University's Center for the Study of Ethnicity and Race. And we've spoken to Frances periodically over this past year, and I asked her to join us again today to reflect on where Puerto Ricans have ended up in Maria's aftermath.
Puerto Ricans are moving to places that maybe there was very few Puerto Ricans, South Dakota, for instance, and that's a direct result of recruitment for labor there. We've seen people move to cities generally not associated with Puerto Rican migration, although there are some people there, like Minneapolis. Then you have an uptick in the number of people going to sites that already were experiencing a large influx, like Florida, but also a return to historic locations, like in Massachusetts, like in Pennsylvania, even in New York, that has been experiencing people leaving for Florida. Now there's more people coming in to areas like the Bronx.
Now, I mean, we can sort of say, oh, this is all wonderful. People are coming to the United States. They're finding, but there are tensions that you're noticing as well. Tell us about how those are playing out in the different populations that you're looking at.
Well, one of them is that a lot of people are going to Orlando area, Central Florida, where there's a very large number of Puerto Ricans, and thinking that might be the easiest transition to coming to the United States, but finding that more settled communities there are not necessarily as welcoming as they thought. Another one is I go back and forth to Puerto Rico a lot, and I often engage with people that are going to places like South Carolina or Nebraska, and what I hear them talking about is the family is divided about whether to stay or to return. And often it's children that have already been displaced from Puerto Rico. Once they settle, they also don't want to go back.
And that's something we heard our guests talking about at the top of the show. The other thing that Analí was talking about was how she was placed in a hotel. And that was the beginning of how she was able to get her feet on the ground. We talked about, you and I talked about the documentary film After Maria, which focused on one of those families. And it raised a lot of issues, a lot of uncomfortable issues about the displacement resources that were being given to families who were coming from the island to the continental United States. Well, help us understand a little bit about that tension, too, like this idea that, you know, who is deserving of resources, who isn't, who is working, who isn't.
Well, at the heart of this mass migration after Maria is precisely the issue of recovery and resources. One of the reasons that people are leaving in such great numbers is employment or the economic austerity crisis. But another one is that promised funds for recovery in Puerto Rico have still not arrived at the level that they were allocated. So some of those people are deciding to try to access those resources by moving away from Puerto Rico to the United States, but often finding that the resources are not there or that people in those areas they're settling are resentful that they are demanding or requesting such resources.
This, of course, the aftermath of Hurricane Maria and also more recently the protests against Ricardo Rosselló and his government really, I think, reestablished some connections between the diaspora, folks who are Puerto Ricans who are here in the United States, in the continental United States, and those who are on the island. With this migration, with this new population settling, how do you see that affecting the diaspora, if at all?
One of the reasons that people are going to these historic areas of Puerto Rican settlement is because there are networks of support. I think the austerity crisis and the aftermath of Hurricane Maria demonstrated that there are a large number of Puerto Ricans in the United States that are very much in tune and invested in the future of Puerto Rico, even if they're not permanent residents there. On the other hand, you know, there are people in Puerto Rico that resent that too. I would say that it has changed, though. If you look at the similar tension 30, 40 years ago, there was much more resentment and rejection of New Yorkers or Puerto Ricans coming from the U.S. But I think I've heard many people in Puerto Rico express that they feel gratitude towards those Puerto Ricans from here that have used their resources and their voices to support them at a time of tremendous need.
Francis Negron Muntaner is a Puerto Rican filmmaker, writer, and professor at Columbia University Center for the Study of Ethnicity and Race. Francis, thanks to you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Puerto Ricans aren't happy with the political situation, and we are going to fight back.
We first spoke to Stephanie Nieves-Rios last year when our team was on the island. Stephanie is an organizer working with La Olla Común, a Centro de Apoyo Mutuo, or Center for Mutual Support, which opened immediately following Hurricane Maria to help feed people in need.
Spaces like this, which isn't the only one, this is a network of mutual support centers, as well as other projects that popped up, kind of gave people space to both find that comfort and also to talk about these things.
I checked back in with Stephanie this week, and like Francis, she too has witnessed an exodus from the island.
Even though the initial disaster in the way that's visible passed, people are living the economic consequences of what it meant to shoulder this reconstruction on our own shoulders and not with the help that we deserved and were entitled to by both local and federal governments.
When I spoke to Stephanie in 2018, she echoed what we had heard from others, that the themes for Puerto Ricans 1 year later was resilience. But it seems like resistance might be a better word for the feeling on the island now.
Puerto Rico has had a wild summer of resistance. And to me, the resistance that we saw this last July is a great example of how that resilience was always resistance and how people are now seeing that they can take that resistance that they live every day in their lives and turn it into action.
There are other political and social issues that are now coming to the surface in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about those.
We have a long history of these different chapters of the same capitalist model being applied in a different way. Hurricane Maria came around, but before that, we were already under the fiscal control of a supposed fiscal supervision board, which has absolute control over our economy, and that's still sustained. So when people lived this tragedy post-hurricane, when these chats came out, to us on the ground, it was so much more clear than it's about all these other things that are happening. The university's tuition has already been raised. Pensions are also going to be drastically cut within the next couple of months. We've also had a dramatic increment in gender violence on the island since before the hurricane till today. And this year we're following a similar pattern. There's just all of these pieces happening at the same time. So we had this big movement towards Ricky Renuncia, and it's important because it showed people the power that they have. People aren't still protesting in Old San Juan, but they're meeting in people's assemblies to talk about what's happening on the island and think about solutions.
In addition to that, there's been an increase in the conversation, even among elected officials in the United States Congress, about whether or not Puerto Rico should become a state. Last year when we were there, we spoke with a University of Puerto Rico Rio Piedras student named Edgar Velasco. And at the time, he was the state chairman for the College Republican Federation of Puerto Rico. And I want to play for you his thoughts about statehood.
As a Republican, yes, I believe in statehood because I have seen how not being treated equally has resulted in a lot of the problems we have right now. Obviously, also mixed with bad administration, a lot of corruption cases over the years, and some other elements that have been sometimes our fault and sometimes more of a result of the whole status and situation, political situation we're in.
Stephanie, with everything that we've seen this year, is statehood part of the answer or the answer? Would that help the situation in Puerto Rico, in your opinion?
I agree with what he's saying in the beginning, right? There is an unfair treatment of Puerto Ricans. There is obviously a sub-citizenship. I think that what isn't included in that is the intentionality and the benefit that the United States gets from Puerto Rico being neither a state or an independent country. From my perspective, also seeing the capitalist logic leads to a lot of exploitation here on the island that is important to the model. I think our status as a colony is something that we have to battle against. And for me, that means working towards the independence of Puerto Rico and towards reparations from the United States to help Puerto Rico become a free country.
Stephanie Rios works with La Olla Común, a Centro de Apoyo Mutuo, or Center for Mutual Support, which opened immediately following Hurricane Maria. Stephanie, thanks for talking to us, and it's great to hear from you again.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.